Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Two of Claude Monet's paintings of the garden at his home in Vétheuil, France, have been reunited for the first time since they were created more than 100 years ago, thanks to a long-term series of loan exchanges between the National Gallery of Art, Washington, and the Norton Simon Museum, Pasadena. On view in the French Impressionism galleries of the West Building from May 19th through July 29th, 2018, the Norton Simon version of the artist's garden at Vétheuil, painted in 1881, has long been believed to have served as the basis for the gallery's canvas of the same title. The paintings are the only two of the four known works Monet painted of this scene currently in public collections, and their relationship may not be as straightforward as scholars previously thought. Curators Kimberly A. Jones and Emily Talbot joined together to discuss the paintings in advance of their public unveiling.
Hi, I'm Kimberly Jones, curator of 19th century French paintings at the National Gallery of Art.
And I'm Emily Talbot, assistant curator at the Norton Simon Museum in Pasadena.
And today we're actually going to talk about two very interesting paintings from our respective museums, both paintings of Monet's garden at Vétheuil, both painted in 1881, two paintings that are a part of a group of four related paintings. But what that relationship is certainly a subject for a lot of discussion and debate. Mm-hmm. And it's been proving to be some very interesting discussion mm-hmm. in the last few days.
Yep, not as straightforward as we thought when these paintings were living across the country from each other. And actually, this is the first time that they've been united since they were painted in 1881. So it's been really exciting mm-hmm. for us at the Norton Simon to be able to see our picture in conjunction with yours.
And very exciting for us as well, because our painting actually stayed in Monet's studio until very late in life, until at least the early 20th century, 1910, perhaps even later. Mm-hmm. The only painting from the group that actually stayed there, which mm-hmm. is kind of intriguing in and of itself and raises a lot of questions mm-hmm. that we don't know the answer to yet.
Yes, why he kept one and sold the Norton Simon picture in 1882, along with a painting of the same dimensions and of a similar approach to the scene. But those two paintings have mysteries of their own, including which one may have been exhibited at the Impressionist exhibition in 1882, why these two were sold to his dealer, Durand Ruel. Our painting had a private collection life for a little bit longer than yours, I think. It was sold to a number of different dealers over the first half of the 20th century, and then eventually made its way to Christie's in 1975, and then to Wildenstein, who sold it to Norton Simon in 1975, and it's been with us ever since.
That's funny. Our painting, too, also had a very similar but completely separate trajectory. It went through a couple of different dealers in the early 20th century, and then went through the Wildenstein Gallery, and eventually made its way to the collection of Elsa Mellon Bruce in 1961, and then was given to the National Gallery upon her death in 1969, came to us in 1970. Our painting is a little unusual because if people know anything about Elsa Mellon Bruce, who was, of course, the daughter of Andrew Mellon, our founder, and the sister of Paul Mellon, one of our great patrons, and another great devotee of French art, she liked small French paintings. Mm. Her collection was made almost exclusively of very small canvases, very tiny, intimate paintings. They were of a scale to live in her apartment in New York. They were works that were meant to be domestic in scale. And this painting is the largest Monet in our collection, mm-hmm. one of the largest paintings she ever owned. So it's a kind of curious contrast yeah. to what we know about Elsa and her personal tastes. You know, we don't know why she was drawn to this very large Monet canvas.
Yeah.
But perhaps it fit in with the same notion. It's intimate.
Yeah.
It's a domestic, private scene of a family and small children in a beautiful garden. Visually, it's very, very pretty, but it's kind of an outlier in her yeah. collection.
Well, that's really interesting to hear that, and I completely agree with you that there's a kind of intimacy to these scenes. And as a viewer, you're sort of invited into this secret garden space where you're either alone with your thoughts, in the case of the Norton Simon picture, which has no figures, or in the case of yours, having a kind of tender exchange with these children that are facing you down on the stairway.
I don't know, facing you down, because you do get the sense these children sort of broken loose. There's a vague figure in the background in the Washington painting that looks kind of like a woman, that maybe is, you know, could be the sister, could be a nanny, and as these children have sort of broken free and escaped from their parental control and are running loose in the garden. There's some a little shape that we think might be a wagon, but it's very unfinished, because these children want to be out in the sun. They want to be out in the garden playing, not, you know, cooped up inside.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's really interesting to see the two paintings side by side and to see what a difference in mood the absence of the figures results in the Simon picture, because there is this, the palettes are very similar. Mm-hmm. The sun is shining, the flowers are bright, but there is something a little bit quieter, a little bit more moody. It's not melancholic, but it's contemplative in some interesting ways. And I'm not sure that your picture is necessarily not contemplative, but it does have that energy of the children and what are they going to do next.
I think that's really true. And that almost is that element of sound. Mm-hmm. Sort of gives you sort of multiple perspectives. You've got sound, you've got light, you've got the sight all going on. So it enlivens the painting mm-hmm. in a certain degree. At the same time, though, the brushwork on the Norton Simon painting is so intense and so rich and lush. And in many ways, it's a very almost condensed. I mean, all the power sort of condensed down into a smaller format. Mm-hmm. And so it feels very powerful and very lush and rich.
It's interesting, too, because I've been mentioning this to you earlier today, but for so long, we've thought that the Norton Simon painting was a study for your picture because of the dimensions and because of the absence of the figures. But seeing them together, at least for me, has raised a lot of questions about not necessarily the order in which they were painted, but what function the smaller painting served for Monet, and how much, in fact, he was working in multiple ways with this single canvas, thinking through what this subject might be and how it relates to the other three pictures mm-hmm. of the same scene.
Yeah, and maybe we're not dealing with a neat linear progression from the smallest canvas, which is in a private collection, through the Norton Simon painting and another painting that's in a private collection promised to Los Angeles County Museum of Art, which had the same size, and then the Washington painting. That seems the obvious progression, but there might be more of a back and forth between the paintings mm-hmm. because the other painting in the collection in Los Angeles has two children in it, mm-hmm. which are absent in the other two versions. So what is their relationship? Mm-hmm. Is he going back and forth? Is he painting simultaneously mm-hmm. on different scales, different compositions? I mean, mm-hmm. all the relationships are not nearly as straightforward mm-hmm. as they appear when you're only working for reproductions. It's really, you know, what scholars have said up to this point, I think everything that's been said about these paintings needs to be rethought.
I think that's absolutely the case, especially when it comes to the energy of the brushwork, because the tightness of the Norton Simon mm-hmm. painting, the carefulness with which he was articulating forms and thinking through color relationships and how he was applying paint to canvas, a lot of those things are really different in your picture. Do you make mm-hmm. anything of that so far?
Not yet. And again, this is the great opportunity to have 3 months to sort of spend with these two paintings. Because, for example, had I only known the Norton Simon picture, had never seen the Washington picture, I never in a million years would have thought, study. Mm-hmm. It's so fully realized. It's so finished and resolved and complete. Mm-hmm. It stands on its own terms. Mm-hmm. And it's only because this other painting exists. And again, what that relationship is, we don't know. Mm-hmm. Was he creating, you know, who was he? Intended audience, I think, is a really important question with Monet, where he's working a lot for the market. He's trying to sell art, and he never sold the Washington painting, but clearly had no difficulty selling the other three paintings.
Right.
Was it a question of scale? Mm-hmm. Were they more suitable for a private home? The Washington painting is very large. It's not really a painting for a private residence. It's more a museum piece.
Right.
Or did he keep it because he really loved it? And how did that factor into the facture? Is it an exercise? Is it an experiment? Mm-hmm. There's so much we don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really nice point. Especially, you know, we've been comparing particular aspects that raise questions for us, like the sky area in the Norton Simon painting. The sky's been painted completely blue, we think with a layer of green underneath, and then the clouds are painted on top of that in different shades of pink and white. And in your picture, it's something quite different.
Yeah, I mean, he leaves reserves. He leaves empty spaces, so you see the ground showing through, and it sort of brings some of the paint from the blue sky towards the cloud, lets some of that exposed canvas ground show through, and then adds sort of pinky paint. So it gives a lightness, it gives a luminosity, it also gives a freshness because you mm-hmm. really get that sense that he's sort of making it up as he goes along. Mm-hmm. And yet there's that one little cloud, the tiny little cloud on the far right, in both paintings is painted over the blue sky.
Right. So does he do these at the same time?
Or does he go back? Does he add that cloud into the Washington picture, look at the Norton Simon picture and say, oh, and tax it in because the clouds are so much alike.
Yeah.
But the other two paintings, again, do not have any clouds in them. So mm. is he going from a cloudless sky to a cloudy sky, or is he going back and forth?
Yeah. We're so much with Monet in the studio with these two paintings because mm-hmm. we have so many questions about his process. And then there's all this evidence of process mm-hmm. within them, including in the Norton Simon picture, little brush hairs poking out of the surface that give you the sense of the energy and the dynamism of just the process of making them.
Yeah. I mean, they're such incredibly alive paintings. And that's one reason why they're so incredibly appealing mm-hmm. is that you can really feel the artist's presence. And again, going back to that notion of intimacy, that these are, you know, the two children in the Washington picture. One of them is his son, Michel, and the other is Jean-Pierre Hochaudet, who was the son of his friend, Ernest Hochaudet. The two boys were only 6 months apart in age. And, you know, so you have that sense that they are family. That mm-hmm. These are not just, you know, models. They're not just neighbors. They're actual family members. So it, once again, brings everything back to Monet and mm-hmm. his experience and what's happening in his life. It's a very personal kind of painting.
Absolutely. And even the construction of the space itself, you know, Monet planting this garden once they rent the home mm-hmm. and bringing the jardiniere, these vases that have large gladioli growing out of them. You know, he's kind of cultivated this space to make a picture from it, which is a really interesting thing to think about in terms of the labor of pictorial mm-hmm. practice.
Yeah. And it's also a really good reminder that there is empirical truth and there's artistic truth. Mm-hmm. Because what you see is reality, but Monet orchestrates and curates the experience so beautifully. What you can't really see as a viewer is there's a road, a public road, that bisects and cuts the garden mm-hmm. off from the house. Mm-hmm. And all you see is this wonderful view up the stairs, and you don't get a sense of that separation of space. You don't get a sense that it's a very narrow garden. It feels so lush and expansive and rich. And he's showing you how it appears, but he's very careful what he does and doesn't show, how he arranges things, where he sets his easel up to get that sense of expansive space, to give you that sense of the fullness of nature.
Mm-hmm, that's really nice. And then the way the composition also either draws your attention away from those elements or makes them a part of the viewing experience, the way that you're sort of led in your painting backwards into space from the jardiniere in the front towards these children, up the steps, across the road towards the house, and then up into the sky beyond is really interesting. Mm-hmm. And I love this idea of the sounds that you might hear in this space and that you might, if you were actually there, hear cars that we see no evidence of whatsoever. No street noise is interrupting this kind of quiet, private space of the garden.
And, of course, you would have heard from the other end, you would have heard the sounds of the Seine.
Right.
Because the garden continued on to the river
mm-hmm.
and off, you know, outside the picture frame, essentially where the viewer is standing is where the river is.
Right.
So you would have heard the sounds of water and wind and birds. And so you would have had all of that going on. But again, he carefully arranges and curates your experience through that painting and does other paintings as well while he's there showing different vantage points of the garden. But he never does a group like this. It is so closely related and really sort of invites that kind of conversation.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you and I have been trying to figure out over the past 2 days is how we can relate this kind of grouping to the more familiar series that he does in the 1890s. Do you have any thoughts about where we go from this 1881 moment forward?
Well, I think, you know, we've talked about this as sort of a proto-series.
Yeah.
Because everyone is very familiar, most people are, with his series paintings, the paintings he does of the haystacks, the grain stacks, the poplar trees, and of course Rouen Cathedral in the 1890s. And that notion that he takes a motif and studies it with such rigor and intensity and explores different aspects by subtly changing the time of day he's painting, the light and atmosphere. And he's not doing something quite that rigorous here, but he seems to be dancing around the idea of taking a single subject and exploring it multiple times with subtle variations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a true series. I mean, there is not, again, that sense of that it's one moment in time over time. Mm-hmm. There's not that sense of the passage of time.
Right.
I mean, we don't know really the time of day per se. It's not entirely clear. and what the relationship is, but he seems to be moving towards that idea. And I think that's really exciting because, you know, something as massive and monumental as the series paintings, that kind of idea doesn't just come out of the blue.
Right.
It develops, you know, very naturally out of something else. Mm-hmm. And I think we really are seeing sort of the first germ of that idea that will then be continued to be expanded upon and developed and will ultimately come to fruition in the series.
Yeah, that's a really nice way to put it. And I love the idea that visitors here will get to experience that germ by seeing the two paintings together. Because when you see them together, you really do think through the mind of the artist somewhat. Why make these changes? Why go to this larger canvas or this smaller canvas? What does it mean to paint this motif in a slightly different way? What's he trying to understand better through the exercise of doing the same scene multiple times?
Yeah, and I think what's exciting is, you know, obviously for us as scholars, it's wonderful to sort of have the opportunity to really think this through. But I'm really excited that the public mm-hmm. will get this chance because we don't have all the answers for them. And they can make up their own minds.
Yeah.
They can experience these two paintings side by side and start, hopefully this will invite them to really look closely and maybe start having their own conversations and start figuring, you know, puzzling through. Because maybe there is no one answer. We may not, at the end of all of this, have something conclusive, but I think the conversations and debate is really exciting, and I love the idea that the public gets to take part in that.
Yeah, that's such a nice way to put it. I think we're going to have to be like leaning in on people's conversations in the galleries and seeing what they make of these two pictures together, because I imagine them walking down the hallway mm-hmm. in the gallery, turning to the right, and then seeing these two nearly identical paintings and trying to make some sense of that.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.